Good afternoon. Can everybody hear me? Sounds like it's on now. Great. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Digital Future of Healthcare panel. My name is Grace Lanny, and I believe I have with me today three professionals who are not only going to give you some information relative to healthcare, but will also challenge you to think about the way that you manage your own healthcare providers and perhaps look at that the way you might perhaps get your cash from any ATM around the world. I wanted to spend just a second on the panel format. I'm going to give a little topic introduction, and then I'm going to introduce each one of our panelists. They're going to talk for about 5 to 10 minutes, and then we're going to open it up for questions. My current firm is Motion Computing. Many of you who are from Austin might be aware of Motion Computing, the tablet PC company that's here in town. We've launched a new healthcare tablet in conjunction with Intel, and I spend my time integrating these devices with large healthcare IT companies like Microsoft, like McKesson, like Siemens, like GE Healthcare. And having worked with these devices in multiple environments, such as the hospital, in a doctor's office, and in home care environments, I became very fascinated by the myriad of systems that were involved and the challenges those institutions faced running their businesses on paper or in the process of transitioning, whereby they might have multiple different systems they'd have to look at in order to get all the information about a particular patient. Let me give you just one example. What you see here is something called a WOW or a COW, a workstation on wheels or a computer on wheels. If you go into many hospitals, you'll see these up and down the corridors. And the intention was to give a nurse or a clinician the ability to look up information in a patient record very easily, log in medical information such as a particular prescription, or get labs, or get x-ray information. But what happened is these cows were so big, about 100 pounds, difficult to push around, they couldn't bring it next to the patient, is that ultimately the nurses would write down all their information on a little piece of paper, and not being able to find the WOW or the COW, they would end up waiting for a particular time, perhaps once or twice in their shift, where they could batch enter all that information. The good news is that they had access to a computer now. The bad news is that a doctor who comes in to do this rounding at 5 o'clock in the morning doesn't have his vital signs. And so let's talk about that little process. So they take the vital signs, they write that to paper note, they locate that WOW, log into the electronic health record with the multiple login and passwords they require, document their information, and log off, which takes about 5 minutes. You may or may not think that's a big deal, but multiply that by the number of times they have to take their vital signs, multiply it by the number of nurses, the number of days in a year. It gets to be a large amount of time that's spent supporting that vital signs process with a WOW in the hallway. So Motion's focus is to take a device like this to the bedside so that they're entering this information on here instead of on that little piece of paper. It also allows you to take a delay of 2 hours or more on average down to an instantaneous update of the vital signs information. So if you think of someone you love being in the hospital where their vital signs, their cardiac, all that information is critical to the success of their stay in that hospital visit, you want to make sure those vital signs are being entered regularly and the doctor's alarmed if it's outside the range of health. So I wanted to also very quickly show you a little video that I think sets up our talk today very well.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I hope that got some thoughts going in your head as we were watching that video. I'm going to introduce our first panelist that will be speaking. And I hope that the audio for the computer is turned down.
Before you pull the cord out.
Yeah. Is it down? And so Michael Kennedy is a healthcare specialist at Microsoft with over 15 years of experience in information systems and healthcare. Michael focuses his time.
You can keep that down
on hospital systems, leveraging technology to communicate and collaborate more effectively. Michael.
All right, thank you. So I work for Microsoft, and some of you may or may not know that we are solely and straightly in the healthcare game. So we have about 600 people that are full-time healthcare professionals at Microsoft. That includes doctors, meaning MDs, researchers, of course, and then people like myself who are out in the field who are working with healthcare organizations to help them connect systems together more effectively. So if you can go to the next slide for me. So when we actually go back one, if you can. Can you go back one for me?
I can.
When you think about this mission that we have inside of our healthcare group in Microsoft to improve health around the world, it seems a pretty bold goal, a pretty bold mission. But when you think about 25 years ago, our mission was to put a PC on every desk. And I don't think we meant a PC in every chair, but you know, you look around at the number of people who now are carrying tablets around with them, PCs around with them. I think a goal for the future of improving healthcare around the world is really achievable, especially when you consider Bill and Melinda and Bill Gates moving off to the Gates Foundation, and Warren Buffett gave him billions and billions of dollars to go and, you know, do good as far as improving education and healthcare. So I think this is something that we can achieve, and at least we can make a huge impact. So if we look at some of the key investment areas that we're making in healthcare, the first is really just around the Windows platform. You, again, may or may not know around healthcare circles that we do a lot of work around standards. We sit on the HL7, which is a format for transferring information around between health systems. Sit on the board there. We released a white paper called the Connected Health Platform. And so the Connected Health Framework. What that does is it is a non-Microsoft-based framework for building connected systems inside of the healthcare space. So it's based on industry standards for the protocols, but it is a contribution to healthcare of these are ways we can architect systems that can communicate and collaborate with each other. And then you have just the ubiquity, whether you like it or not, really just, you know, Microsoft software is all over the world. And so when we look at the fact that we can build health systems running on the Microsoft platform, and we can then interchange information between platforms that are not running on Microsoft, it really sets up a stage where we could have this connectivity to share information. In fact, the Allscripts system, the Allscripts paper-free system that we looked at on the video, is all built on top of the Microsoft platform. All the storage, all the screens, everything. Some other areas where we're investing is this thing that we just recently renamed several products to create a brand called Microsoft Amalga, which comes from the word amalgamated, so to bring together. We invested in a unified intelligence system, which takes all of the existing systems in a healthcare organization, feeds all of that information into one basically huge database, and then gives users, whether they're clinicians, doctors and nurses, or hospital administrators, or researchers, the ability to get to all of that information, again, in a very secure and protected way, but be able to access all of that very, very quickly through a standardized user interface. So it makes it much easier to use the existing systems. But we've also done investments in other parts of the world where we actually bought a healthcare information system. It used to be called, Global Care Solutions. They had a system called Healthcare 2000. We purchased that, and it's now called Amalga Hospital Information System. And then we also have a RIS and PACS system, which is the radiology information system, and then the system for storing things like MRIs. And these are not going to be sold in the United States anytime in the near future, but these are systems that will be operated in third world countries where really the healthcare is not anywhere near our standard. And we're taking whole data centers and collapsing them down into running on one rack of servers. In fact, they took the data center at the first hospital where this was developed, and they made it into a children's ward. And they now have all of the computers that used to run in the data center running on one rack, which is kind of cool. And then the last thing that I want to really focus my attention on is something that is more consumer-oriented and consumer-driven, which is Microsoft Health Vault. So how many in the room have heard of Microsoft Health Vault? All right, great. So a few of you. So Health Vault is really a platform that does three things. It allows you as the end consumer and the most concerned person, hopefully, about your healthcare, to gather information, to collect it, store it securely, and then share that information on a limited information basis with, it can be doctors, it can be other systems. We also give you a search interface, and if you can go to the next screen for me, you can kind of flip through this. So on the lower left-hand side, you and your family, so we have the ability to direct input. You can actually type stuff into your system. If you go to a doctor's office and they have a report, they can fax that, and we have a special barcoded fax cover sheet, and it goes right into your health information system or your Health Vault system. And then you can also do a lot of searches. And as opposed to searching, whether you use Live or Google or Yahoo or whatever you use to do your searching, if you search for something like diabetes, you're going to get something like 400,000 hits back. And so how do you wade through that information? So the search in Health Vault is all based around health-related information. And we have targeted articles that you can use that are specific articles on particular conditions. And it's a much easier way to get to health-specific information from authoritative sources instead of just reading something that somebody put out on the web. And then up in the upper right-hand side from the websites, you have the ability to give permission for other websites to pull and push information bidirectionally from your Health Vault account. So like we have a lot of partners that are part of Health Vault, and so there are training, like Peak Fitness is a training site where you can upload your GPS data from your Garmin, or if you have a pedometer or a heart rate monitor, you can upload that, and then you can synchronize that with Health Vault. You can also do that, though, with health information systems from hospitals. And so Allscripts is one that is already integrated with Health Vault. You can also do personal health devices like I talked about, things like the blood pressure, things like glucose monitoring. So now you have a record that can go with you wherever you go that doctors can integrate with of all of the information about all of your conditions. And then this last area is just that really that you have all the hospital information, all your doctors, everybody can get to this information. So what we're getting to is you own the data because, you know, let's face it, if the doctor messes up, you die. They don't die, typically, in a hospital-related error. So I think really the onus is on us to own our information and to be able to provide that information to those that are giving us care at the point of care. I'm just going to skip through the rest of my slides, and we'll just go real quick. This is the Health Vault search interface, search for diabetes. So one note on here, there is one section that is sponsored results. All of the data inside your Health Vault account is your data. You own it. We don't mine it. We don't give you targeted ads based on what's in your health information. We just give you a little targeted ad based on the condition you typed in or the word you typed in. Again, privacy is key in Health Vault, and we went to all of the consumer privacy organizations, the lead ones in healthcare, as we developed it, and they came out with us on the launch and said, we approve of the way that this has been developed and the way the information is secured. Let's go to the next slide. These are just some of the organizations that we're working with. One in particular down on the lower left, CapMed. I'm just going to highlight that for a minute on the next slide. But things like Polar, which is the heart rate monitor systems, you have the ability to interface from devices connected to your computer to Health Vault through this thing called the Connection Center. And so it gives you the ability to upload the data. The next slide. So this is an example of a company that's working with Health Vault. This is an online PHR, that's a personal health record. You keep all of your information in there, and it synchronizes back and forth to Health Vault. So you have one place where you can keep your data. And the really cool thing about this this company, CapMed, is they have a version of the software that runs on your handheld device, a version that's on the web, one that can run on a USB key that you carry with you, or you have a little card you put in your wallet that has a URL on it. And if you get in an accident, someone can look up this URL, and it has your in case of emergency information, your allergies, your emergency contact information, so that the caregivers can then get that information to be able to help you. And so just a company that's working with Health Vault as an example.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Next, I'd like to introduce Dr. Greg Luxinger. Graduated from family practice residency in 92 and opened his practice in September of that year. In addition to seeing patients in his office, he admitted to several hospitals in Austin. Greg?
Well, as Gracie said, I was in clinical practice here for a long time in Austin, and really was, I guess you could classify me as technophobic. And about 5 or 6 years ago, the doctors in my group, there were five of us, started looking at the idea of adopting electronic medical record. And we did this out of necessity. We're on the third floor of our building, and our charts became so heavy that they actually had to reinforce our floor at the cost of $20,000. And we were told that we could add a couple of more chart racks, and then at that point, we just have to move. So we looked at a variety of systems that were on the market, and we didn't like any of them. They were hard to use. They were really expensive, and the training curve was, it took a long time to master them. And so we gave up the search. We said, it's not ready for prime time. We'll look at it again in a few years. And literally a few weeks after we made that decision, one of my patients came in for a physical. I knew he'd retired from his old job, and I asked him what he was doing, and he told me that he was working for an electronic medical record company here in Austin. So that's how I got involved in this. We agreed to become a beta site, and we started working with a system, ironically, that runs on motion tablets. And I wanted to show you some slides from the system. I've tried to anonymize it because I don't want it to be a commercial, but I want to show you some of the things about the system that are appealing to doctors, and we can even discuss why. It's by no means a perfect system, but we've been able to use it now for several years. So this is an initial slide that shows how the system looks when you log on. You've got your a password to get in. Then you can choose what kind of work you want to do. If you want to have just a refill, if you want to do a complete H&P, you can do that. And you can search by patient name. There's a variety of different ways you can do this. This is what the initial clinical data looks like. One of the things that is a big deal to physicians is we're taught in medical school to organize our data in very specific ways. You've probably heard of SOAP notes and other things that we use. And we really don't like to deviate from that, because when you've done something for a long time, when you change what you're doing, you get out of your, I guess you could call it a rut, but if you get out of that, that's when you make mistakes. And so we wanted something that flowed the way that we thought it should. So we have typically the most important information when we see a patient are things like the vital signs, allergies, their medications, and then past information regarding surgeries, medical problems. That will get you through most of the things that you need to make initial decisions. And so that was there was an attempt made to incorporate all this on one page. And you see that there are tabs on the side and on the bottom here that allows you to navigate the chart in ways that we and nurses and office staff are used to doing it. This is an example of how you work through data for a visit for hypertension. And you'll notice that, I hope you can see it, there are, after many of the terms, there are parentheses with little dots in the middle. And if you click on that, okay, great. If you click on that, that opens a field where you can write in free text. And we use Microsoft handwriting recognition. When we first started using it, it made a lot of mistakes. But after an upgrade, it is so good that it's spooky. I mean, all five of the doctors in our office can write in cursive, and it almost never makes a mistake. I've written things when I was in a hurry that I couldn't read, and it got them right. So that's a really nice thing, because we like to go through sort of algorithmic templates to make sure that we're getting the information structured properly, but there's almost never a patient visit where you don't have to enter some free text. So that was something that we liked very much. And one of the reasons that this is structured is because at the end, your note has to have a certain structure. It not only needs to be organized in the right way, but it has to contain a bunch of different data elements. If some of those are left out, it can be a problem for somebody that has to see the patient subsequently, and it also really messes up your coding and reimbursement. So as we move through this, you can see that you go down, there's a history of present illness, which you see at the bottom, where you're essentially asking the patient what's going on with them, and they're providing your information that you then put in. And it's fairly detailed, and you've got an example here, the 1994 is just some information that was written in. And you can put entire paragraphs in this way, and it can be really helpful. You can also draw in the application now, and that's good for a variety of things. If you need to draw something for a patient so they understand a procedure that's about to happen, it's nice to have it documented electronically, and if later you need to fax them a copy, you can do that. And this shows a way that you can put in multiple diagnoses. You could have a patient that comes in for hypertension. They also have bipolar disorder. And maybe the hypertension is the most active problem, but while you're there, you want to make sure that that you check up on their bipolar disorder and make sure that it's not an issue and that it's stable. Now, one thing that is super important for physicians is medical care is becoming exponentially more complicated. There's more recognized diagnostic entities. There are enormous number of new medications that come on the market every year. There are increasingly identified numbers of drug interactions, even among old drugs and drugs and foods. And there is no way that even the most dedicated healthcare professional can keep up with all this. We do our best, but it's just really difficult. And the same thing applies to tests, lab work, x-rays. There are tests that we didn't have 5 years ago that we use all the time now. And again, it's difficult to know when it's appropriate to order these new tests and what to do with the results. And that's something that these systems, if they're set up properly, can help with. So here you see somebody that is entering some tests that might be helpful in treating somebody with hypertension. People with hypertension frequently get kidney problems, which makes them anemic. So you've got hematocrit here. Potassium is important, especially with certain blood pressure medicines. Now, as you go into this, you have the possibility of having alerts pop up. Pheochromocytoma, which is mentioned here, is a cause of treatment-refractory hypertension. And it's very uncommon, but if somebody has it and you don't figure it out early on, they're not only going to not get better, but they're actually going to get a lot worse. And so it's easy to forget to do this because it's so rare. I mean, I haven't seen one in nearly 15 years, but I know people have seen them. And the ones that were identified early did really well, and the ones that weren't did poorly. So it's nice to have things like this pop up to remind you of the things that are frequently not helpful but might be really helpful. There are also the possibility of having these reminders for tests that are considered routine but frequently aren't done. There's a lot of stuff that's recommended for routine care, but in the hurry to get people through the office and with distractions like phone calls from the hospital, it frequently happens that people forget to do these things, and having reminders is really useful. When you come down to prescribing medications, this is another area where we make a lot of mistakes in healthcare. When doctors go in and they want to write prescriptions, it's important for them to be able to figure out at the time they're writing the prescription if there's an interaction between a new drug that they're writing and old drugs. And it's often the case, I mean, doctors will typically pick a drug in their class and try to use it as much as possible. So for example, if you use lisinopril all the time, you get to know the ins and outs of this medication and you're really comfortable with it. But there are times when you can't use that drug. Either it's not on their insurance or it may have an interaction with a drug that they're already on. And so then you have to step outside your comfort zone and write something else. And when you do that, that's when you start having a risk of having problems. You don't know about a particular interaction that the old drug didn't have that this one did. You might not even remember the starting dose. You might think you do, but then it turns out that you don't, and you either over or underdose it. So systems like this have the potential to help you with that and to prevent mistakes, to help you save the patient's money by writing things that are on formulary. I had a patient a while back that needed to be on a seizure medication. And there's a lot of seizure medications out there. There's some like phenobarbital that have been around longer than I've been alive and that cost pennies. And then there are other drugs, one that I wrote for this patient, and with their particular insurance, their copay was $460, and they had to fill this every month. So it's nice to know that up front, and instead of getting a call from a really upset patient the next day when they're at the pharmacy. A thing that we really liked about this system, and you're going to be seeing it more and more, is every click that you make in the system goes through natural language processing, and it generates a note that looks like somebody dictated it or wrote it out by hand. It's actually readable. And this is extremely important because it's rare for patients to see one doctor these days. You know, they may have a pulmonologist for their asthma, an endocrine person for their diabetes, and then a primary care doctor for the routine stuff, and an OBGYN. And it's critical for all those people to know what's going on. A frequent thing that you see is two doctors writing prescriptions for the same thing. You may have a patient, I've seen this before, where you've had patients on four different drugs for the same problem. That enormously increases the risk of side effects. It's a huge waste of money, and it's not good medicine, but it's very hard to keep track of what's going on. Notes that come from some of the older systems are virtually illegible. And I mean, you really have to sit there and work through them, and it really pisses off the other doctors that you're working with. So this generates a note pretty much the way we were taught to write these things out in medical school. And a system like this can also help you with coding, which is kind of the bane of the doctor's existence. If you overcode, you get audited and you get in trouble. If you undercode, you don't make any money. But the coding rules are pretty complex, and we don't like to memorize them because that's not what we like to do. We like to take care of patients. And this can help you with the coding. And the documentation that it puts out is the kind of stuff that Medicare and Medicaid and insurance companies look at. So if you do get audited, and you will at some point, it makes the process a lot faster and a lot easier. And you see here down at the bottom, we've got an E&M code that tells us what we're going to charge. This is the kind of thing that third-party payers look at. And then I just wanted to put a slide in here at the end. This is a slide of an orthopedic issue, and it just shows you what you can do with graphics. I mean, every little colored area that you click on here opens up a separate sub-template, so you can put in information about that. And typically, these can be rotated. You can zoom in, zoom out. You can go through different layers from the skin down to the muscles, down to the bones. And in addition to looking really cool, it really helps you because you can go in with a great deal of precision, and you can also show this to patients while you're going through it. So that's kind of an overview of the system that first got me sucked into this. And it has shortcomings, but it's pretty usable. You know, 10 years ago, I would have stated that there were no good EMRs on the market. I mean, there were none that people were really, really happy with. There are several now, and those continue to improve, and every year we get more that are pretty good. The challenge now is to have all these where they can talk to each other, and that is a big concern of a lot of physicians now. They want to move ahead and implement an EMR, but they're concerned that down the road there'll be an opportunity to have a system that communicates with their hospital, for example, and theirs won't be able to do that. So they'll have to replace the entire thing. And so you see a lot of hesitancy in that area, and I think that's a big challenge right now in getting EMRs out in the market. And we can talk more about that. I think there are ways that that's probably going to happen, but I don't want to take up too much time right now. We can take questions later.
Wonderful. Thanks, Greg. So our last panelist today, Dr. John Grohal. has been creating online communities and resources for people with mental health concerns since 1992. He is the publisher and CEO of PsychCentral.com, one of the internet's largest mental health networks today.
Thanks. Thank you. You don't have to
read. Okay.
You embarrass me. If we can just go to the first slide.
Yep.
Great. I just wanted to start off my really brief remarks today and just kind of emphasize that we talk a lot about technology, of course, and sometimes get wowed by what we see or the platforms that we use. But it really is this means. It's not the end itself. And at the end of the day, especially when it comes to health information, it has to and it can better help us manage information to make better informed decisions at the end of the day. Let me go to the next slide. So, you know, there are so many tools available in healthcare today, and the scope of these tools is just growing every year. It's just amazing. You heard, you know, two people talk very eloquently about PHRs and EMRs allowing us to better manage our health information and data. And I think those are very important and will become more and more important tools as we move on. But you're seeing some really interesting things online, too, in terms of the social networking component being brought into health and the Health 2.0 movement that conference last week was out talking about. You see websites like Patients Like Me, which does really interesting thing with collecting massive amounts of patient data and then aggregating that data to provide some really useful information for people that have like things like ALS or multiple sclerosis. If Care Pages, which allows patients to, through their hospital, basically blog about their experiences with their health, with a surgery, with something like that. But it's a private blog only open to their friends or family. You have ratings and reviews of doctors' treatments. And the thing I'm just going to talk briefly about today is you're seeing a lot more of the online assessments. If we go to the next slide. So, you know, when someone's sick, what are they thinking? They don't just go to a doctor when you have the first symptoms of a cold or something. You know, you do what everybody does. You look it up online, you go WebMD or one of the other places, and you say, blah, 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 I'm sick, you know. And then you might also ask your friends or family, you know, say, hey, honey, you know, I think I'm coming with a cold. And she's like, well, you know, what are your symptoms? I feel like I'm going to die. Well, okay, so where do you go from there? You know, again, most people are kind of reluctant to pick up the phone and just make a doctor's appointment until it becomes so overwhelming that you really feel bad. And even when they do, when they get there, they're not always forthcoming with the doctor with all the information that doctors really need to know in order to make an accurate and reliable diagnosis. And, you know, it could be because of an embarrassing symptom. It could be because of a stigmatized concern or whatnot. And then doctors ask very, you know, common questions like, you know, what other medications are you taking? And when you're there, you know, with that 5 minutes with the doctor before he has to see the next patient, you're sitting there and thinking, well, you know, I'm on this medication, that medication. And you get out the door and you forgot that you also needed to mention this other medication that you're on, which is very helpful to him because he needs to know about drug-drug interactions when he makes the prescription for whatever it is that will hopefully help treat you. And then there's that issue of inconsistent follow-up. You know, have you actually gone and filled that prescription that I gave you, and are you taking it as per directed? Because medications don't work if they're not taken in the way that they're meant to be taken. Next slide. So, for instance, online assessment is really just helping people gather information in a systematic and reliable manner. And by doing that, that really opens the door and provides instant, accurate results, not only to the patient, if need be, but also directly back to the doctor. You get that increased honesty in the responses to the computer asking the questions. And because the computer has the list of, you know, 15 questions or 100 questions, you're going to get
more reliable reporting as well, because it's asking all the questions, and you're going to remember if it's saying, and what other medication are you taking? Is that all? Are you possibly taking this medication based upon prescriber data that we know that, you know, if someone's taking this, they're more likely also to be taking that? You can ask that question. You can also, when you do an online assessment, you can also see trends in the data. Because if the person goes back and takes it time and time again, for instance, I work in the area of mental health, and you know, one of the most common mental health concerns is depression. And you can track depression over time. You ask a person 5 questions, and you can actually see, you know, whether their mood is improving or decreasing. And doctors can make very, you know, helpful judgments based upon looking at those data trends. So, and there are basically 2 types of online assessment that I've kind of briefly mentioned here. One is the screening kind of idea. And screenings are really fantastic because they allow people to check out whether they might have a concern that they should take to their doctor. So again, for depression, 5 questions, I can tell you whether your depression might be serious enough that you should go talk to a mental health professional or a doctor or someone about that. And then you have more in-depth assessments too. There's something called Global Mind Screen, which is this 500 question online survey that you take. And basically what it spits out at the end of that, and it doesn't take 500 questions, but because it uses logic and decision trees to decide what questions to show you, it provides the clinician with a report about what the possible diagnoses are. Here are some recommendations for a treatment plan and goals. And here's what you should do for follow-up. And the patient doesn't see that, the doctor does. But the doctor, on the first session, before they've ever even seen the patient, already has a printout that says, wow, I don't have to go through all my diagnostic questions, which can take, you know, 15, 20 minutes. We've already cleared that. We have time to talk about, you know, what are the possible treatment options. We actually have a little leeway there to go through what your concerns are and what your fears are about this treatment or whatnot. And then just the last thing I wanted to mention briefly is, you know, we talk about these things in really broad brush strokes. We have an hour. We don't really have time to get into what we could easily spend an hour on each one of these kinds of questions. But as Greg mentioned, you know, how are all these things going to connect together when you have your Google Health platform and you have your Microsoft Health Vault and you have literally, I don't know, maybe a dozen other providers in the space, and there is a common language to use to talk to one another, but that doesn't necessarily mean that each provider is going to provide the same set of tools to actually get the data back out when you want to close your account, as we see with, you know, like Facebook or whatnot. You know, shutting these things down, turning off your PHR might be just as hard as all the effort that you put into building the PHR in the first place. You know, and then your common questions that you should always see in any panel like this: how secure are these systems? You hear a report every 6 months comes out about another retailer lost another, you know, 500,000 person's credit card numbers. And you think, oh, okay, great. I'll just, you know, call up my financial institution, get a new credit card. Once your health information gets out there, though, this is stuff that people make really life serious decisions based upon, whether to give you future health insurance, whether to give you future life insurance, whether to give you a job. People are not legally allowed to discriminate against you for these things, and yet they do. And of course, the last point is, should we care about privacy? And if so, to what extent? Certainly there are people that will say, if you find these tools helpful and useful, then privacy becomes maybe more of a secondary concern. But I don't think privacy is often talked enough about in relationship to some of these new tools and social networks and whatnot when it comes to specific health concerns. Because it's one thing to say, these are my favorite books and this is my favorite music, and share that with the world, and that's cool. But then when you start talking about, you know, grappling with all these other issues, or I've just been diagnosed with end-stage cancer or something, it really becomes a question of, great, well, what happens when someone Googles your username that you also use on a hobby website, and so they can connect that to a real identity, a real life person, and boom, you know, again, it circles around and you didn't think those issues through. And the problem is we seem to a lot of times err on the side of, oh, let's just put this in here and we can always take it out later. And I don't think that's always as easily the case as we think. So thank you.
Okay, this is the time where we get to hear some questions from all of you. If you would, use the mic in the center of the room, and that'll help us be able to hear you and also record what's being said. Please.
For Dr. Kennedy, Microsoft operating systems and software are kind of famously insecure, and Microsoft itself, unfortunately, has somewhat of a reputation for being a corporate predator. What things are you folks doing to build trust among the patient community, and how do you think, how do you think that you'll be able to show people that Microsoft is a good partner for, or actually a good steward of their private healthcare information?
Absolutely. It's a great question. And I'd like to say that I'm a doctor and I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express, but so I'm neither smart today or a doctor. But it is a very good question. And if you look historically where we were as it relates to security of our operating system and our applications and viruses and, you know, just the list goes on, it was a very open platform by design back before we had the internet. We have done a lot. And if you really look at the most recent information about the number of security vulnerabilities and the number of critical patches to systems, I think you will find, looking at the most recent data, that we have improved dramatically and are actually a leader now in security and privacy, which I know that just blares in resistance to everything you have in your head. But look at the recent data and you'll actually find that we've made tremendous strides. And part of that is around, with the release of Health Vault, we went immediately upon looking at the possibility of developing this to privacy groups and worked with them. And they actually stood on stage with us when we released Health Vault and said, we agree that this platform has been developed with security as the first thing in mind and privacy as the first thing in mind. So I would just ask you to challenge your beliefs a little bit, read up on the latest information, and I think you'll find that we're actually a lot different company than we have been. And yeah, we got slapped really hard by Janet and Janet Reno, that is. And we have made some significant changes in the way that we do business. And that's enough of a kind of a commercial. I think I can trust you to go and make your own opinion, but do it on the latest information.
Thanks, Michael. Next.
It's exciting to see what you guys are doing, and I wish you the best of luck. But at the same point, it seems to me like that is the present of the healthcare system. Because it's obviously you're beta testing it now. I would like to have you guys talk about what you think is coming in the future. For example, ubiquitous computing interfaces like yours is very data entry oriented. And while that's better than the paper system, it's still very error prone. It'd be nice to see, monitoring patient's body a temperature, for example, by the ambient temperature in the room. Or, for example, Matsushita, a Japanese company, has a toilet now called the Kinko Tawari, which I think they're trying out in some hospitals, which analyzes the excrement of a patient and sends that data in to be tied to their profile as well. Are there farther things that are coming in the future that you guys are looking at? I mean, this seems very software-oriented for motion computing, but what's coming next is what I'm asking.
I can talk a little bit to that, and maybe we'll each take a minute or one point. Yes, absolutely. So the most exciting thing that's on my plate right now is relative to combining the data that you have with your device that's with you every day with the device that you're computing with, if you're a clinician, nurse, doctor, or a home care provider. And so we are seeing applications come out that can do that well, whereas a year ago that really didn't exist, or at least I wasn't aware of it. We find that, in fact, we had someone come up to us at HIMSS, if you're familiar with that particular, it's a very large hospital-centric event that goes on and every year here in the United States and also
other venues around the world, where this particular vendor came up with a pill dispenser for, you know, an aging population, the ability to integrate their health, monitor that, and then present, you know, the right cocktail, if you will, based upon their present. So there are some really interesting things that are bubbling up relative to the future of that and on the hardware side. But I'll pass it along to the rest of the panel to comment.
Okay, well, maybe we should just go from one side to the other. I think that you're going to see a lot of changes in the way devices that patients use in their home, for example, bring data to the people that are making decisions about their care. And you've also, you're starting to see a lot of changes in hospitals where patients do have sensors that are put on them that provide continuous input. I think they showed up there first because you had patients that were less mobile and you had facilities with a lot higher budgets. But a good example now would be like an insulin pump. You know, we have patients that wear those and they dose their insulin based on the meals that they're having, their AccuChecks that they do, how active they are. And the capability is there, for example, to have one of these that keeps a log and reports with Bluetooth to your computer, which then sends it to the doctor's office. And if something happens, if their insulin utilization starts going way up, then you can be on top of that. Same thing with peak flow meters. You know, we send patients home with Holter cardiac monitors where they record their heart rhythms for 24, 48, even 72 hours. And typically they have to take the Holter and drop it off, and then a cardiologist has to read it, and then the report comes back to your office. But that stuff can be synced up and can dump out at home too, which just shortens the whole cycle time and gets people care faster. And I think those kind of things are going to be really helpful. And then as we've heard before, getting patients to enter their own input, either through journaling when they're putting in information at home or before or after an appointment, that stuff is really helpful.
Yeah, I agree. And the I had mentioned the website, for instance, Patients Like Me. We now have the ability, you know, through these online networks to aggregate and look at data in a much more time-sensitive manner and on an ongoing basis. You know, traditionally, research is done. It's done at a specific point in time for a year. Boom, done, over. And the FDA has MedWatch, which supposedly is supposed to catch, you know, medication problems after they approve a drug. But we're seeing that when we have a large enough patient population in a network for any given disorder, they can become the early warning system for problems like Vioxx and whatnot in the future. You're not going to see it coming from governments. You're going to see it coming from these social networks that have been set up specifically to help identify issues and problems as they arise.
We're seeing the same thing with there are these leading indicators as to what might be going wrong with you. Let's just say that you have a condition like diabetes, and so there are certain leading indicators that you may be tracking, like through a glucose monitor and through your weight. And so what happens typically in healthcare now, someone's going along here, and then they start to have a spike in a condition. And the point at which they should receive care is here, and they do receive care here. And they receive care when they've gotten to a really acute phase. So it's much more expensive, it's much more time-consuming and difficult for the patient, and it's much more life-threatening. And so as we see this integration of these different devices, then we'll catch people on the way up that curve instead of at the peak of the curve. And the result of that will be not only better health, but then also less spending on the health care because we're not treating somebody in the acute phase. We're able to catch them before they get there. One of the biggest problems that we are facing in a nation as it pertains to our health care is the amount of money that we're spending. There's been the highest percentage of our gross national product of any country in the world, and we are ranked down in the third world country spectrum of list of countries in our ability to deliver quality care. And it's because of the way our healthcare systems are set up. And so we're hoping to see some changes in that in the near future.
Thanks for that question. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Letty from Genis Health. And you're talking about spending and all this money, and it's great that the Googles and the Microsofts of the world are going to fly in and save us. But as an independent developer and as a small company, I know that every day I go into my job and I say, if somebody else hands me another standard, I'm quitting. What are you doing to help us developers actually come in and try to save the world in our own way? Because honestly, it's not even a competitive market, because only huge companies can actually develop anything that any doctor can actually get into their system. So, you know, what can we as a community do to actually get past these HIPAAs, these CCHITs, these HL7s, these huge stacks, to actually give something that actually saves people and does this and reduces costs and reduces error proneness?
I'll take that.
As a company too.
Okay.
What is Microsoft and Google doing with APIs? I mean, you never hear healthcare mashup because people go, "Oh my God, no, HIPAA!" You know, whatever it is. You know, how can we overcome that and be competitive?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely get what you're saying. One of the things I like about Health Vault, just as an example, is that it is not the end solution. What it is, it's a platform. And there is, if you go to it's MSDN/HealthVault, I think, or HealthVault.MSDN, then or just search for it. Then you'll find that there is a whole developer kit for Health Vault. So it is a platform to develop on top of, and you can develop using Java or .NET. There are other languages that are all specified for you and what the interfaces are, and it's all web-based interfaces. So we give you the ability to develop solutions on top of this storage and sharing platform with a whole device-driven model up in the cloud. And so I think that things like that can help you. I do get what you're saying, though. Things like developing a hospital information system, you know, there's no way that you as an individual or even this tiny group of individuals can build something like that. And so it's trying to find point solutions that build on top of maybe the work that other people have done that you can make a living. Yeah.
Wonderful. I think we've got time for one or two more questions.
Hi, I work in the Global Health Division of Booz Allen Hamilton, and I have actually designed some interfaces for working with the National Children's Study and the Mammography Program Research and Information System. And I wonder, for Dr. Luxinger, the application that you looked at was basically an electronic version of a paper form. It didn't really look any different. It's a totally different medium. Are there instances where there's been research done to maybe make it more efficient instead of just changing the medium, actually changing what you can do with it? Does that make sense, making it more efficient considering the technology behind it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of research that's going on in that, and I think people are trying in different places to implement parts of that. My feeling is just that it all hasn't come together as it should yet. I think we're going to see a rapid evolution over the next 5 to 10 years. You know, from a physician standpoint, there are some things about doing it this way that are huge for us, even though it's not a gigantic switch from paper. One of those is being able to access the records when you're not at the office. That is gigantic, because I'm a family practitioner, and that is not a particularly hospital-intensive specialty, although for some of us, we do a lot of that. There was a time where I was going to 3 different hospitals and also seeing patients in home visits, and the fragmentation of their records was just huge. It really slowed down our ability to treat them, and it tremendously increased costs, because even a day while you're waiting to get a result for somebody in the ICU is enormously expensive. And then having some of those decision support tools is a big deal for us. But yeah, I agree with you that we're just scratching the surface right now.
Thank you. Okay, here's our final question.
We've talked a lot today about passing digital information from, doctor to system and system back to doctor or doctor to doctor. Is there anything, does anybody see anything in the future as far as digital information being passed from doctor to patient in patient education and patient retention of knowledge?
Well, I can start with that. That is a really important area. I think, as Michael talked about before, we need to. Patients are ultimately the most interested in their care, and they should be. And we need to transition from a system that is primarily doctor centric to one that's patient centric. And there are different ways to do that. I've been doing some work. I'm actually at a different company now than the EMR company. And we're doing some things with college students, and education of college students through their student health centers is a big deal. I mean, you've got these kids, their first time they're ever dealing with their own health care. You know, they don't have their parents to remember everything that's going on. And this one student health center that we have spent a lot of time with did a study. I mean, typically these places have an entire room full of pamphlets that they give out to patients. And these guys did a study. They put a trash can 5 feet from the door where the patients leave, and they counted how many pamphlets they gave out and then how many were in the trash can. 80% of them made it in the trash can 5 feet from the door. So I think that having systems set up where you can send information to patients electronically so they don't have to deal with pamphlets, so they can go online and proactively look for information in areas where the information is reliable. And there are some standards now, or some accreditations, I should say, for information online. There's a URAC accreditation. There's another one called HAN. I believe HAN was developed through the World Health Organization. URAC is more localized to the United States. And they have things that criteria that sites must adhere to get and keep their certifications. For example, information in a particular specialty needs to be authored by somebody that's in that specialty. You can't have a psychiatrist writing an article about cardiology. There has to be openness about the author. You have to have information about his academic and work history. There has to be review on a regular basis to ensure that the information is accurate. There's a lot of things like that that I think if you stick with those sites, you're likely to have much more accurate information. And there's some appallingly misleading and inaccurate things on the internet. That stuff is important. But I'd like to pass that on and see what the other guys have to say.
I think we're probably close to past done here. Yeah. So thank you very much. Enjoy the show.